Hi, I'm Richie Mackay.
And I'm David Bolt, and you are listening to the Wrong Bias Podcast.
And on show 51, we have two Bulls England singles champions, Lewis King and Steph Branfield. Richie has a bit of a rant. And we touch on the action from Down Under. And it's a big welcome to our new competition sponsors, Top Rink Balls. A massive thank you to Peter and the good folk at XX20 for their support over the last 2 years. Everybody, and welcome to show number 51 of the Wrong Bias podcast. I know it's been a difficult one for him, right hand man. Obviously, our sympathies goes with him, the loss of his father. Our thoughts were with all the family, mate. I know it's been a difficult time for you, but there was some light shining over you, mate, I think, in the PBA qualifiers at Hartlepool. PBA started, the streaming started and what have you, and you managed to get through, mate, and booked yourself back down to Potters.
As you'll know after, it was a tough one, mate. It was a real sort of bittersweet moment for us, because the first person I would have texted or called would have been my dad, and I know he'd have been over the moon, but it was over the moon. I mean, like I say, it's third year on the bounce now, I think.
Yeah, great, mate. I mean, I've heard that Potters have had to order more Gatto in, and what are the food supplies have gone up dramatically, I've heard.
I heard the manager just slapped his head when he heard it.
Anyway, we did the streaming, mate, and we 600 watching the final, mate. Couldn't believe it.
When you told us after the game, it was staggering. I mean, we normally, you know, 100, 150, isn't it, during sort of the games through the day. But when it's Sunday night at half past 10, quarter to 11.
350 on Facebook and 250 on YouTube. Tremendous, absolutely tremendous. Was a cracking final. Was a shame one of his, obviously you were playing your mate Paul, who you get down the pairs. Was a tremendous final to watch.
Yeah, and it was sort of a double bittersweet moment. It was like everything. I spoke to Paul after, and he says he was trying his best to beat us. So there's, unfortunately, I think I was talking to somebody prior to the game, and when you're in that position and you're playing one of your really good friends, you've just got to like take the friendship out of the equation. If you know, you're there to win a game of balls. I think sometimes it can be a little bit too friendly. I'm always trying to be as polite as I can and sportsman through the game, which both of us are. But I think from that friendship point of view, it's quite easy to get caught into a sort of discussion and maybe takes away your focus and things like that. So yeah, it was hard, because I know, I think that's the second final Paul's been beaten in. Sorry for mentioning that again, because I know he'll listen to this, but it will happen. I mean, the lads, you know, he's too good not to qualify, and it was great for us in the pairs last year, and I think you got a massive taste for what it was all about, and give him even more hunger to qualify. You know, from Paul's point of view, it was his ambition to get there, because again, touching back to Paul lost his dad a couple of years ago, and it was always his ambition to obviously qualify, and dad always wanted to go down there. And Paul said, he'd always said to his dad, the only way I'll ever go down there won't be to watch, I'll only go down there to play.
It's the start of the PBA grouse shooting season, isn't it, mate? There's loads of events. I think there's 20, is 26 or something like that. There's quite
26, huh?
Quite a few. I mean, you kind of praise Jason, the work that he does, and everybody with the PBAs to get the events organised and what have you. And we're doing a bit of streaming for them as well. Big shout out to Paul Nichols, who's doing a bit of streaming as well. He's just started. I think he's had a dose of realisation how difficult it is to stream at times. I hope he sticks at it as well. We've had quite a few inquiries trying to give them other people tips how to go about the streaming and whatever, so it's finally starting to take off, which we hoped it would probably last year, mate, didn't we? We thought, well, hopefully people will pick up and see that you can do it. Gotta have patience, really.
I've always said that it's huge credit to yourself, because obviously people have watched the streams that you've done, and doesn't always go to plan. No. Wi-Fi drops out. It's, you know, and it's, for all it's a free service to people, you're there, you've put the time in to actually do it, and just those, you know, technology issues that you've pretty much got no control over, especially outdoors, obviously affect that. So it's great Paul's doing it. And as we talked about the other week, the whole point of you starting it was the hope that other people would grab hold of it and do it across the areas, because there'll be nothing better than being able to watch balls right across the country and some good quality balls. And 600 watching on a Sunday night shows that there's certainly an audience for it.
Yeah, without a doubt, mate. And of course, you're clinching your place at the World Singles in January. You're playing the USA qualifier. The winner of that plays Les Gillett. WBT ranking list is not out yet, but we have had a little look at it. Paul Foster's still number one. The interesting thing is that all the points that the players have accumulated over the years have started to lose the value, whereas in the past, your top seed probably had about 180. I think he's down about 60 now. And yeah, 18th seed, which is probably Alex, is about 18. So the gap's closing. There is chances there for people to break in.
I was staggered when I saw it as to what the level of points is right across now. And I think it just shows there's nobody out there actually just dominating at the minute. There's seems to be a different winner or different people getting the latter stages every year. And that's starting to show in the ranking list, because where maybe a couple of years ago, there was people in the hundreds and you were looking at that and thinking, probably win the world championship twice and I still wouldn't get there. Now you look at it and you think qualifying a couple of occasions, have a couple of good wins, and you could be right in there. Getting in there is hard enough, but I think probably easier to drop out now as well, because there's a lot of players out there who are playing this sets format, playing the PBA qualifiers, and it's obviously thriving. So there's going to be different people qualifying every year. So no, it's all good. All good. On the show today, we have Bowls England's Finest for 2023, both our ladies and gents singles champions, Chris King and Steph Branfield. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Hello.
Hello.
Great to have you on. Thank you very much. It's our first show since the Nationals took place, and what better way than to have our two champions on. So start with yourself, Steph. Obviously, it's nothing new for yourself. Is that your second you've won now?
Yeah, second in 3 years, yeah.
It takes a lot to win it once, never mind winning it twice.
It does.
Win it twice in 3 years is absolutely tremendous. We'll come back to you in a second, Steph. We'll go to the man who I haven't spoken to and was probably more shocked than anybody else, but quality again came through in the end, and you must have been elated, Lewis, to win you first.
To be honest, it's been what, nearly like 6 weeks already since we won. It still hasn't sunk in. I still can't really believe it, to be honest, but it was a good few days.
Did you, just touching on your run, at any point during your sort of run at the championships, did you feel as if you had a big chance the way you were playing?
Genuinely, I'll be honest, I was quite happy after the first round against Simon Richardson from Northumberland. It was a really good game, but I was just happy with how I played. And that was the only game I played, I think, on the Thursday. And then I had two games on the Friday, and those two games were a struggle, to say the least. I was behind in both of them and wasn't probably playing anywhere near my best. And somehow I just managed to turn it round and get over the line. I think I beat Adam Barker 21-19 and then Nathan Nimmo 21-18. Certainly, I was 16-11 down in both of them, I think, against Adam. I think I was 19-14 down and come back and won. That day, actually, or that night, it was a really hot day at Leamington. Absolutely knackered. And I was sharing with Mum and I said to her, I've got to go to bed. We literally went back to the hotel, had a bit to eat. I was genuinely in bed by 8:30. And I still think that was the best decision I ever made, because who knows, you know, if I'd have stayed out on the beer or whatever, went to bed late, maybe Saturday wouldn't have gone as well as it did. I don't know. But that was good.
A couple of things you've touched on there, which is, you know, what we've covered previously, which is, first of all, I've always been a massive advocate of the fact of sometimes to win a championship, you've got to get through the ugly games. You've got to battle, you know, you've got to...
Absolutely.
When you learn to win games, when you're not playing at your best or it's a bit of a scrappy affair, you know, those players are the ones who tend to win the championships or, you know, achieve higher honours, because you've got to find that way to obviously win the game. And the second one you touched on there, we were just talking about it, it's amazing how tiring it actually is, just mentally. The physical side of it, even fatties like me can get through a day and manage to still play games, but it's the mental side of complete focus that you've got to try and obviously get through game after game. And then not only are you thinking about that game whilst you're playing it, but you cannot not think about, I'm getting closer and I've got a chance here. So all of these things are playing on your mind all the time. And that's, you know, it's no surprise whatsoever that you probably were shattered at the end of the day, especially with the heat.
Yeah, definitely. Like I say, it's just, I think the way those two games went, they were longer games, obviously, because they were close as well. I don't even really know. I guess I found a way, whatever that way was. I think I genuinely believe, and I said this in my interview with Sean for Bowls International, on the day, I felt Adam Barker was the better player. You know, he really was. He was more consistent. He was getting off the line better. I probably bowled a handful of really quite massive bowls at the right time, which was the only reason I won that game. Against Nathan, I did turn it round, perhaps not quite as late as I did against Adam. And then, you know, started the next day. And I kind of, once you get to the next day and there's eight people left and you're all on one green, you just sort of look across and you think, well, somebody's got to win it. You know, I still never really thought it would be me, but somebody out of that eight, including me in that eight, has got a chance. You know, if it goes well, if you play well, you just never know. And fortunately for me, it just came together at the right time. As I say, I still can't really believe it, but it happened. And yeah, just amazing.
Great stuff. So, Steph, obviously you won your first one, I'm presuming it was 2021,
yeah.
Is there any similarities? Was there any sort of anything similar to this year's championship that you could look back on 2021 and take a lot from? And did you know the experience that you gained from winning that?
Yeah, there's always a get out of jail game, and my get out of jail was the quarterfinal against Power Walker. I think I was 17-12 down. And I won 21-18, I think it was. And that was like my get out of jail one. There was a get out of jail one in 2021. I think it was 20 all playing the last end. And the lady against me had two bowls to get within 4 feet and dropped both of them short. So that was my get out of jail one. 21 was, yeah, it was different. I've been to a lot of semi-finals up to that point and could never get over the line. And then I think I had Nats in the semi. I was like, just keep playing your bowls because at some point it's going to happen. And I just didn't know when. And then once I'd beaten Nats, it was like, just go and enjoy it. I think it was 11-2 down in that final in 21. Came back and won 21-15. So it's kind of like that battle of don't worry if you're down. Just keep going, you know, try and change your length, get into that consistency, and hopefully they're missed and you get an opportunity. So that experience from that mentally has definitely helped me since then in singles. And yeah, but it was very different this year. I can't put my finger on it, but I just went out there and enjoyed it, because when you've done something once, you've always got that target on your back. And I mean, Dad's always told me you'll always have a target on your back as soon as I got in the international team. So sort of like had that guidance as well. And it was kind of just go out and enjoy it. And yeah, it was very different this time. And it was really enjoyable final because I've known Jane for quite a long time as well. So, and yeah, I was really happy with the way I played in the end.
In a strange way, it actually, sometimes having that one championship, yeah, you've got a target on your back, but I also think that's quite a nice thing, because you go into every game, not the person who's never won that championship before, but you know that everybody potentially knows you have. In a strange way, I think doesn't make it easier, but it's a nice feeling to know that if things don't go your way, you've done it before. And I think hard to comprehend that the feelings that some of your opposition are also going through, because they're probably going back to your 2021 where you're trying to get your first, and it's probably really easy to drop two balls four foot short, because in a strange way, it's even bigger for them, because what's the worst thing that could happen to you? Yes, you want to win it, but the worst thing is nobody can ever take away 2021 for you.
Yeah.
So it's it's a strange one. So I'm just dropped obviously your dad's name, and I'm going to ask you both as well. If we talk about horses with pedigree, two of you have got two canny bowlers in the family, I must admit. I know both very, very well. Spent a little bit of time in the sunny climes with both of them. So far as yourselves is concerned, has that been that pedigree behind you? Is that the driving force for you both? I'll go back to Lewis for starters. Has that been a driving force, seeing what your mum's done over the years?
100%. It has to be. You know, I've watched her play at such a high level for such a long time. And it sounds cheesy, but I am so proud of what she's done in the game. You know, years ago, she didn't really start that young, to be honest. Her dream was to win the county singles, you know, and I think she's done slightly better than that. It's amazing. I love watching her. You know, I've really tried to support her more since her parents died as well, like my grandparents, because they kind of followed her everywhere. She was kind of best friends with her mum, really. So that was really hard for her losing them. So I've really tried to step in there and sort of support her. Like quite often if she's through at Leamington or Nottingham, and if I'm not, I'll go with her. Certainly learn some stuff of her and obviously other people in the game that I've been surrounded by as well. But yeah, to have someone that close to you be that successful is, you know, it's great.
And for anybody listening who might know who Lewis's mum is, it's Mervyn King. Only joking, only joking.
He plays darts, doesn't he?
Yeah, so yeah, Wendy's had a fantastic career, and it's great. Like I say, one thing I've always seen with yourself, Lewis, is when she's been down at championships, it's great to see, you know, your hosts just absolutely is you know, thrilled for which you would be. That can only be good for yourself, because when you're in and around that and you see the pressure situations and you see what you've got to do to win it, then yeah, you know, it can only be good for yourself.
I feel like she's always been able to bowl the big bowl. I know quite often she's been skipping, so you got more opportunity to play the big bowl. You know, it's not bread and butter leading, you know, slapping them all over it. But I've certainly seen her do that on so many occasions. And, you know, if I could be half as successful, a quarter as successful as she's been, then I'd be happy. So,
I mean, the one thing that's grand about in my mind about your mum in our bowls career is seeing her with knee-length socks on in Australia. That will never, ever...
Her and Louis
never leave
there for that one, so I didn't see it in the flesh.
I tell you, the picture next to Louis Rideout is one to behold. I'll tell you, beautiful, beautiful it is. Steph, obviously, very similar question to yourself. Your dad's had an unbelievable career over the years. Pip, same question for yourself. Is that, you know, part of the big reason that your career is sort of going the way it's going?
Yeah, he's always been behind me, as well as my mum. Obviously, dad's got the achievements, been there, done it. He's obviously managed at Commonwealth Games, so all his experience, yeah, he does pass on a lot of it. Yeah, he certainly helped me with sort of some of the mental side of things. And yeah, I mean, I've played with him as well, and he's lovely to play with. You just do whatever he tells you to do, because there's no point arguing. Although I do argue a little bit more nowadays. I never really saw him play at his peak, so, you know, it's difficult to know. Obviously, I know he's done very well, and I've seen him play very well, but not at his peak. And so I just try and keep going. And yeah, I know he's proud of me, although he won't tell me that. Yeah, he does help a lot. And if I've got any issues, he's quite calm about it. Just helps you along, and yeah, hopefully I can keep going for him.
Is that his way of keeping you on your toes, by not giving you that that sort of excessive praise?
Oh yeah, I never get any praise from dad, very rarely. Normally I hear it through mum of what you said to other people, but he wouldn't tell me. And when I said, oh, that's nice of you to say that, and you go, oh yeah, well, I've got to keep you on your toes. And so yeah, it's but yeah, even he's had the tears in his eyes when I won both my singles and the two wooden stuff. So you know, that kind of says it all for me, really, because yeah, he wouldn't necessarily say it out loud.
No, that's great. And you know, deep down he'll be as proud as punch, and like I say, that's maybe just his managerial ways in the past and the way he's probably dealt through his own career.
My gramps was very like that, I think, with him as well. So yeah, it's definitely been drummed into him as well. He never gave him any praise, but he used to talk to everybody else about it, but not him. So yeah, and dad's very much the same.
Just tell him Dave says stop being a miserable old goat and be nice. Now, obviously, looking forward to 2024. I don't know if Mr. Stato has done some research on the bottom there, but where's the world champion of champions next year? Is it
Skegness?
Well, it's funny you say that. I have heard on the grapevine that Wales have put in for it.
Don't know whether it works as Southern Hemisphere, Northern Hemisphere, year on year, like one year, one the other. I don't know if that's the case, but then it can't be, because I've just thought, because Sammy won it in New Zealand the year before, didn't he? So.
But I think the last 10 years has been either Australia or New Zealand.
Yeah.
So, right.
Yeah. So I don't know. It's never been in England.
I mean, if it is Wales, personally, you probably want to hope that it's Richie's favourite saying, Llandrin Dod Wells. He cannot speak Welsh at all.
Orson Welles.
He's hopeless, he is. But for me, I think it's a bit of a trek. Well, it's even more of a trek for me. It may be a little bit quicker for you guys, but the surfaces are usually pretty good over there. Last time I was in Wales, we played in the Europeans at three or four of the Welsh Greens in me, I think it was, and it was not a pleasurable experience. So hopefully, Mr. Mackay, have you got anything you'd like to ask?
Well, they want to go to Australia. They don't want to get to Wales. They want to go down under, Malaysia or somewhere like that, man. God,
yeah.
Get yourselves away. That's what you want.
That's what we're hoping for, but
yeah. I think the indoor one, because Becky McMillan won the indoor one this year, and she's going to Guernsey.
Yeah, same. Yeah. Harry's absolutely raging about that.
Kirsty went to Australia the year before.
I think he won when he won the under 25s. He's gone to Scotland, Ireland, and Guernsey.
Unlucky.
And there'll be more from Lewis and Steph in about 6 minutes. Right, mate, Board England National Championships. Feedback, generally great. All positive, I think. The streaming was very welcome. The live scoring got a bit of a hammer, but I believe the number of times that we had to tell people that it was due to the limited numbers of volunteers. People just couldn't grasp it. There's only two fellas knocking around. You know, give them a break. On the Dems side, there was a criticism of the toilets and the changing rooms. But overall, by the sounds of it, probably get 8 out of 10 for it, mate.
Definitely good reports. First year in a long, long time. I didn't touch Lamington at all. Basically, I didn't qualify, so I didn't. I didn't get down there to play anything, but I think one of the things that shone more than anything else was it looked like a national championship. Yeah. You know, the Aviva sponsorship was all over the greens and looked like you were playing at a national finals, which may not have been the case in the past, but all good. And again, year on year, I think it's certainly improved over the last 2 or 3 years. Criticisms have been taken on board and sort of improved in some ways, but then there's still other things that I know are rising to the fore on a regular basis and still seem to crop up year in, year out.
I mean, it is the season to be surveyed, apparently. So Bulls England banged a one out, Bulls Scotland banged a one out. Now, I'm both looking for feedback on various things. Bulls Scotland currently having a few issues, I think it's safe to say. Not really going to the bits and bobs of it. Seems to be a bit of apathy amongst clubs. I think they only got about 18% of clubs responded to the survey. So not going well for Bulls Scotland at the minute, but I'm sure that'll change. And on the back of the Bulls England National Finals, lo and behold, another survey landed in my email box. I did the survey, I filled it in. And I have to say, if that survey was thought of by a bowler, then I'm a Dutchman, because the feel of the questions try to direct you to the answer that they probably wanted. I mean, some of the questions, I just say, really, why are you asking these? I mean, I'll give you a few. I believe that duplications and clashes should be avoided by limiting qualification places. Well, I've always said 2 qualifiers from each county. And the fact that now the championships have gone from 30 days down to 18 days. All right, COVID-induced qualification. Now they've gone back to 2 qualifiers. You're never going to get everything in within 18 days. The only way you're going to avoid duplications is you use your evening sessions, or you split your championships up to a men's championships and a ladies' championships. There's just too many competitions now to squeeze it in. And players shouldn't be penalised for qualifying. If they qualify, they should be allowed to play in their championships, whether it's to play on a night or whenever, but they shouldn't be penalised. The other ones, the formats in the Blue Ribbon events should replicate those at international level. Well, that's sort of like saying, well, yeah, we're going to go to sets. You've reduced formats down to 18 ends. Fair enough. It was a bit of everybody, like 21 ends. We didn't want set. Just leave it as it is. Let us settle down. You didn't have to tinker everything every year. If it runs well, it runs well.
Sets has its place. You know, I think it's perfect for the qualifiers, PBA qualifiers and other events. But I totally agree with you.
There's a couple of others which I'm going to briefly touch on. Matches should be made shorter in some events to provide opportunities for people with less time to play in competition. You know, man, just leave them as it is. 2 others, I would support an event where players can change position during the match. I would support an event where substitutes could, if you want to do that, go and play ABF. ABF. You didn't need an ABA. Go and play ABF. And the one that really did get me going up, and I think it's probably got the going up of a few international players and county players, because they brought the question. Why ask this question? County and international players should be prevented from participating in some domestic events. Surely you didn't stop Ronnie O'Sullivan going in the UK singles national title. You know what I mean? Why? You want to play against the best.
I mean, there's a really valid argument of what they're trying to put across there. And the fact is that all of us county bowlers and international bowlers make loads and loads of money out of the game. So we didn't need to play in national competitions. We play it for the love of the sport. We get nothing out of it.
Yeah.
if you're good enough to continually get there year after year after year and continue to get a lot of stages, then that's up to those other people to try and get the game up to a level where they're going to compete. Players with ability should never, ever be disregarded or taken out of the chance of being able to win a national title. You're just going to lose players left, right and centre. We didn't get enough out of the game to start with. Never mind.
To me, that question counteracts the argument that they have before about the funding and your elite players, because your elite players who win medals get your funding. But Here you're certainly saying, well, you didn't want your good players to win national titles. I think, like we said at the start, we're praise them for the national champions in general, but this survey, I'll be really interested to see what results come through for this survey. Like, I really will.
The interesting thing's going to be, Richie, is not so much, you know, what the players have put in there. It's basically how much of it is taken note, or is this the thought process? What a lot of people need to remember out there again, and I say this on a regular basis, don't go blaming your governing body if there's changes made, because Until people realise that this country for outdoor bowls is run by the counties, and the counties basically will go to a democratic vote, and it will go on how many counties say yes and how many counties say no. So if players have got any consideration or any argument about what could potentially happen in the future, then it's up to them to make sure that the county go with what the players think is the best thing to do, and not just somebody standing there and thinking, I'll say yes because that might give me a better chance of being able to qualify next year. One competition which I think is a really good one, which has been introduced indoors, is a novice competition. If you've never qualified for a national final or been to the national finals before, then for me, great. Give somebody that opportunity that's maybe never had that opportunity before, and allow people to enter the competition because they've never been able to play the national championships before. I'd love to think that as many people as you could possibly think of could get that experience of just going down to a national championships and being a part of it rather than just standing there and watching players. So for me, if they're going to do something like that, introduce a novice competition, but apart from anything else, you can't restrict your county and international players. I'm sorry.
Question for the 2 years. How old were you when you took the game up, Lewis?
I was seven. Started in 1991.
Yeah. I was 12.
12. So,
but I always watched.
So if a family member hadn't been playing, would you have took the game up? And you're both shaking your head, so you both said no there.
Yeah, sorry. We're meant to speak, aren't we? They can't see us, so
no, you are. You are, right? I didn't come back, yes. So you're both shaking your head to say no. So adding something else to that one, now that you're a little bit older, would you take the game up nowadays, Lewis?
That's a really difficult one. I mean, I absolutely love it. Like, I've done it nigh on all of my life. Like, it's the only sport I've ever really done seriously.
If you walk past a bowling green, would you sort of say, oh, I might have a go at that? Or would you just carry on walking?
Genuinely, probably not. I might look over the fence and go, oh, yeah, that's all right. But I suppose it's difficult when you've been a family thing. Like, my mum's parents played, so she got into it because of them. And then me and my brother got into it because they were always at the bowls green, kind of grew up around the bowls green. I don't know. If I didn't have that connection, I don't think I probably ever would have played. And to be honest, I do love it, but other than personal pride and a sense of achievement, you don't really get much out of this game, you know, certainly financially. You know, if that was a bit different, then I'd probably say yes. But
you want to get into presenting podcasts, man? Me and Richie drive Ferraris.
Oh, you loaded.
Yeah, right. He might, but I don't. So what about you, Steph? If you walked past a bowling green today, would you take it up?
Yeah, no, probably not. But then, yeah, it's difficult when you've been brought up with it and, yeah, your family, you know, grandparents, parents, you know, brothers that have done it. And it's, so yeah, I don't know what I'd be doing if I didn't play bowls, if you know what I mean. But yeah, I mean, I've always been sort of into sport, but...
You found the one that you're good at now.
Yeah.
Here's a little twist to that question then. So when you did play, when you did start, when you were youngsters, did you hide it away from your friends?
No.
You know what? I say I never did. You know, we used to have to play like club friendlies at the weekend, obviously wearing grey trousers and like a white top or whatever. And I actually didn't care. I thought, you know, this is a sport I play. I enjoy it. My family play it. I don't care what you think. You know, so.
Yeah, no, I mean, like if you were successful, you were in the local paper and you'd see it. I got teased about wearing a skirt, but no, you couldn't really hide it away. And it didn't bother me because it was something I I enjoyed and I was good at, so it didn't affect me.
Did you miss out on the white gloves and the starch hat?
Yes, I did miss out on that, thankfully.
I bet you were gutted.
Oh, yeah.
He's still got some. She wears them on a weekend.
I
know when I was 10, up in the north here, a 10-year-old playing balls probably wasn't the thing to talk about and say. And I always remember I used to try and hide it from my mates. And I was down at Sunderland Indoor Bowling Club with my dad. And this guy came in, just said, "Do you mind if I take a photo of you?" And you know, I'd really like to take a nice photo of you and your dad. So sitting there, my dad had given us this, taken this barber's, I had a good basin haircut, looked the right clip, 10-year-old. And then next thing I know, this photographer, he was only a photographer of a local newspaper, wasn't he? I was plastered all over the front papers. I won again, Dad. Ah, oh, I couldn't believe it. I was absolutely devastated. Devastated I was. But no, it was an interesting question because, like I said, the little twist, would you take it up now? I think a lot of youngsters probably don't even think about it. And the majority that I know generally come from somebody who's involved within the family. And Richie did, I did. The majority of the lads who I play with up here probably were introduced by family or came along with their mate because of somebody coming along with family. So, yeah, it's an interesting question. Two of the champions of England there. And if it wasn't for your mum and dad playing, would you actually have made that champion of England? Probably not.
No, certainly not in bowls, but probably not in anything else either.
I think you would be the tap dancer, Lewis.
Oh, Christ. You don't want to see me dance, mate. The only time I dance is if I have a few too many drinks.
Yeah, same here. And I don't drink that often, so it doesn't happen very often.
So, Steph, since you've took the game, do you think the women's game's progressed?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, when I first came into it, it was still very, you know, you had to earn your county badge, you had to play in these amount of friendlies to be able to move on. I know in Somerset we had a few issues where you had to be badged to be, you know, representing your county. And if you weren't, even though I think 2015 was my first junior cap, sorry, 2005, not 15, didn't matter that I played for England at junior level, they still wouldn't allow me to play in anything county-wise. So a lot of that's changed. And sort of just, yeah, the county comps, you know, it always used to be afternoons, like every other day. But now it's sort of, you know, evenings. And so, yeah, I think it has developed quite a lot, the women's game, certainly in our county. But yeah, we're still struggling on numbers generally across the country with women bowlers, and trying to get them into it is hard because obviously they generally have the families and things like that. To me, trying to aim at ex-sports players that are too old to do, you know, rugby, football, cricket, whatever they might do, tennis even. That's the ones where we want to, especially women, I think, well, and men, to be honest. If they're sports people already, they're more likely to go into another sport.
I actually think that is the generation that's been missed. So probably people maybe just below my mum's. I mean, mum is, I shouldn't really say this because everyone's going to know how old she is now, but she is 60. You know, maybe the gap between sort of 40 and 60 now, they're the people that, I think they're the smallest number of people playing this sport. Obviously, loads of over 60s. You've got a fair amount of under 30s. But for me, that middle bit is where it has been missed. Don't know what the answer is, but none of us want to see the sport we love go, do we?
Without touching on this again, I know we've covered it in a previous podcast, but you're probably one of the luckier counties, Steph, from knowledge, because there is a reason why the women's game's struggling across the country, and that is because there's still a lot of counties out there still adopt the women have the spare time during the day and the men go to work.
We were very lucky that when we merged, I think it's around 2010, that was when it really started to change. And like Edna and Mo obviously had, you know, ex-internationals, you know, they had a big impact on that. So they could see where it needed to go. So yeah, that definitely helped Somerset move on from where it was. But yeah, there are still some counties out there that they don't care about workers and it's still afternoon. It's just a shame really that we can't force it upon them to change. But I mean, until it dies out in that area, I suppose it's not going to change.
Working in the sport, I'm a big advocate of the fact that the sport's in decline, and we have, myself and Richie's had this discussion on a regular basis. However, we've also had the discussion about the fact of not all clubs are affiliating all of the members. So we've got no idea how many people actually play this sport. Some clubs will only affiliate their members if they play in competitions. Yet there will be a lot of clubs out there where there are women actually playing balls, don't enter the competitions, aren't being affiliated. So the correct numbers aren't being recorded by the clubs, because basically they'd rather keep the money than put it back into the sport for the administration. And this is where my argument comes, that I don't think the sport is in as bad a state as what everybody thinks it is, because technically there are thousands and thousands of ballers out there that we know nothing about, because they just turn up and play social balls at the bowls club.
Can you imagine, Lewis, if everybody affiliated in Kent area, God, you'd have about 10,000 to battle to for that.
Honestly, yeah. I mean, obviously, there's a lot of entries in Kent, or in almost all of the Bowls England stuff. Kent is virtually at the top of all of them in terms of number of entries. It's a bit of a funny one, though, because, you know, it probably only equates to maybe one extra round, maybe one or two. It depends, I guess. But because obviously every time the number's half, and that's a lot of people to lose in a first round. But when you're in Kent, it feels quite difficult, because there are just so many people, so many good players. Given the choice, though, I'd probably rather it be that way than feel almost too easy, you know, if you know what I mean.
I was going to actually ask you this question, because for quite a few years now, and they still continue to be in there, but Devon being the powerhouse in the country, and yeah, Kent very, very quickly starting to take that mantle, because you're banging in national titles left, right and centre. What do you necessarily put that down to? Do you think because of the size of the county and the extra competition sort of brings on a better quality of bowler, or is it just, are Kent doing things right to be able to produce the ballers that you're currently producing?
And this is no disrespect to you know, anyone in Kent, but probably not the latter. I would say law of averages, if you've got more people, you've got more chance of winning, I guess. More chance of having a bigger pool of better players. Obviously, you see it in sport with certain countries. You know, Ireland are very small. They haven't got many people to choose from. So maybe they're not quite as strong. I know they've obviously got great players. England have got a lot more people to choose from. I'd say it's probably the same across the county. You know, why all of a sudden Kent are winning more nationals? I don't know. Don't have really the answer to that, to be honest. It's good to see, because there are so many good players in Kent. You know, it's so, so difficult. I mean, this year was the first year I've ever qualified in the singles, you know, and I probably haven't entered it every year, to be fair. Again, I said in my interview with Sean for Bowls International that I personally have fallen in and out of love with singles, which sounds ridiculous saying it now, just won national singles, but there's been a period of years where I just didn't bother entering it. Then I've come back to it and thought, no, I will do it, you know. So I don't know.
I don't think it's a wrong thing to say. I know there's a lot of people out there who, whether it's just that aspect of the fact that you're out there by yourself and you haven't got somebody to have a bit of crack with, or rely on each other, or that bit of teamwork, or, you know, some people just don't like singles. But
yeah, it's certainly different, obviously, like you say, because you haven't really got anyone to bounce off of. You, I think you need to be mentally strong, which perhaps before this year, that's been my downfall. Especially outdoors, I find at the start of the season outdoors, you find yourself in situations with certain greens, or, you know, the weather or whatever it might be, and you genuinely stand there and think, why am I doing this? You know, I've thought that on many occasions, but it's like what happened 6 weeks ago that makes you keep coming back, I think.
Yeah, definitely. And I'm a big advocate for the fact of, I think success also breeds success as well. Obviously, when a lot of people are starting to do well in nationals, I think it can only push other people to think, I want to be there as well. I want to be doing that as well. Down in Somerset, Steph, how's county is concerned? Is it in a good place? Do you think there's improvements needed? Or
yeah, I mean, when I first started into county comps, you know, it was a lot harder. I'm not saying it's not hard now, because we've got some up and coming really good players. Yeah, I mean, I still got to play a few rounds. Ladies entries are probably down, although I think this year may have been up slightly. But yeah, it's just trying to get ladies to enter competitions is really hard, I find. They're quite happy just to play their leagues and things like that. But yeah, I mean, I always go into every game thinking I've got to play well to win it, kind of thing. You know, I never think, oh, I should win easy on this one, or we should win easy on a team game, you know, because because they're playing you, they're probably trying to play better and they've got nothing to lose. And generally they're the harder ones to play. And I still get nervous now. I mean, I played my county singles final 2 weeks ago, and it's only a girl from my club as well in the final. I was like, I really want to win this one. I really want, like, because I'd won the national one as well, it was like, oh, I can't lose the county one now. And I was really quite nervous going into it, but I started off well, and it just, you know, it just calms you all down and stuff like that. But I think, you know, when you've still got that, you know, the killer instinct, and you do get the nerves, you're always going to be, you know, fighting.
You've got to step at the end of the day, and, you know, you'll both find this out over your career, that day you take the foot off the gas and the day they think you think you've cracked it, and the day you think that you've just got to turn up and win a game of balls, you will lose without a shadow of a doubt. Because if you haven't got that mental focus and complete motivation of the fact that every person you're playing, regardless of whether they've been playing for a year or been playing for 30 years, that technically you're going in there and you're playing against a world champion every single game. And that's the sort of, that's that focus you've got to have every single time, because you've both talked about it. Really, really hard to build up a reputation where there is a target on your back, but it's extremely easy to lose it very quickly as well. And we're seeing it with a lot of players. And, you know, again, we talk about a lot of the youngsters in the game now. Unfortunately, there's a lot to learn because they don't get the basics right. They love to play the big balls. They love to give it the big end. Yep. But then they play the big end, get a six, and then they go and lose a five the next end because they've lost complete focus of the whole thing, because they're more concerned about what they've just done the ball before, instead of going back to the drawing board and thinking, right, I've got to either make sure, worst case turn the scenario, I drop a one here, or better still, pick a two. So that's eight over the two ends, whatever. And that's, again, we talk about pedigree. You will have seen this, you'll have learned this over the years, and this will be why, you know, you're both having the success that you are now as well, which is great to see.
Game management, isn't it? That's the...
Oh, totally.
If only there was a handy book to have for game by Jimmy Bolt.
If you've never watched the streaming before, you'll never have a clue what we're talking about. But I've been writing the book of game management for about 3 years now, Rich.
3 years, 500 pages, dossier.
So yeah, make sure you buy it. It's got all the stickers on already. It's a bestseller. Right, well, before I let yous go, I'm going to put yous both on the spot just for 2 seconds. You didn't know this was coming. So I'm going to test how well yous actually know your sport in your chosen championship that you've won this year.
We'll start with
Steph, and no Googling, Mr. Lewis. Name five women's national champions from England since 2000.
What, in singles?
Yeah.
Amy Gashall, or Farrow as it is now. Ellen Faulkner.
Name yourself twice.
Is there a time limit on this? I want to say Catherine Halls, but I'm not sure that's not champion of champions. Oh, it's tricky because Amy and Els have dominated. No, I'm gonna pass on that one. Can't name anymore.
I think if you asked David the same question, he would pass or not.
Extremely disappointing, Steph. I haven't got the answers. Sorry. I haven't got the answers, by the way.
I'll tell you now, Dad would know that. Dad would know them all.
I expect you to go away and research this and give you a bit of grief after you've gone anywhere. So he'll add this one in at the end. Go on then, Mr. King. I bet you've been Googling.
No, I haven't. So
he's all over Wikipedia at the minute.
What did you say from a certain year?
2000. Men's national singles champion since 2000.
I can reel off quite a few, actually. Certainly Jamie Walker, Ed Morris, Sam Tolkchard, Simon Green from my county, and I'm pretty sure Gordon Charlton won in 2001. I'm a bit of a bowls geek, I have to admit.
Again, Richie will research that, but thanks very much for mentioning my win there, Lou.
Sorry.
Whatever. Your mum's always been the better bowler in your family.
No, she is, mate.
I was waiting for her to say it, but you never.
Log me guts off.
Oh, dear.
Whatever.
Oh, I feel bad now.
I hope you don't sleep for 2 years.
Do you want to take that recording back and do you want to re-record it, Lewis?
Yeah, re-edit time out.
The standout one's got to be David Bolt, you know.
Oh, that's excellent. Yeah, you can twist that into there, couldn't you?
Cut that bit out.
Edit that bit in. Right, guys, we'll not keep you anymore on a Sunday night. Thanks so much for coming on. It's been
a
pleasure, and it's been great to talk to you and obviously just get your experiences of the championships. And again, obviously from us both, can't obviously stress enough, congratulations for your achievements and best of luck when it's tossing down with rain in Wales next year.
Thanks very much. Can't wait.
Take care, guys.
Cheers. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah. Right, there we go, mate. Show 51. Two smashing chats with Lewis King and Steph Branfield. Obviously, they're looking forward to going to Orson Welles for the Champion of Champions in 2024. We'll touch on the World Championships down the Gold Coast in Australia. Well, congratulations to the England women, Sophie Todshaw, Jamie Lee Marshall, Lorraine Cooler from the podcast, and Amy Farrow for winning the gold medal in the fours, mate, beating the Aussies on the home turf. Overall, the England women finished second. There'll be Stewards Inquiry down under because it's the first time since 2004 that the Aussies haven't finished top. And New Zealand, for them, first time that they finished top since the glory year of 1973 FA Cup final. Jimmy Montgomery, Ian Porterfield, Paul Madeley, Billy Bremner. For the other home nation, Scotland finished sixth, Wales ninth, Ireland weren't in the top 10. I couldn't find where they finished out. We'll give them 11th. For the men, Australia obviously topped it. I think they won in every discipline. Ireland finished a tremendous second, Scotland three, England a little bit disappointing in fifth, Wales eighth. Parateam, the paratrophy went to the Aussies, Scotland second, England fifth. I did have a little chat with Danny Porter at Hartlepool during the PBS. They asked him how he enjoyed his Australian experience, and he said the greens were running about 21 seconds. My question to you, mate, is there a case for a green running too fast? For some of the heads that were on shore weren't great.
21 second green is lightning, absolute lightning.
I suppose you just chuck your ball and never sit down.
I suppose in a lot of respects, you know, we've seen the videos of Mr. Alcock and Mr. Bryan playing out in the championships where they were giving it 7-8 foot of green, and you go and have a cup of tea and a pie while you were waiting for your ball to come back. And that's exactly what it was. You know, it was, I think the quarterfinals when we were out there, it was very similar. It was the fastest I'd ever played on. And it was at the point of you just had to drop the ball. It was just flying. And you were outside the rink marks. It was just absolutely flying. Congratulations to Ireland, considering the pool of players that they've got. We've just talked about Will Lewis there. You know, we talk about sometimes when you've got a bigger pool, like England have dominated over the years in international series, especially indoors, and it's a bigger pool to pick from than the other three countries that you've got. So for them, it's an unbelievable achievement, really.
A quick shout out. You've congratulations to Daniel Salmon, Wales, Scotland's Darren, Gulterry. And Ed Morris. Ed taking the bronze, Darren getting the silver.
You've got to give Dan massive credit. I mean, that's twice now he's gone out there and gold medal at the Commonwealth Games in the pairs.
Right, mate. There we go. End of show 51. We hope you've enjoyed it, folks. Hope you stick with us. I hope you catch our live stream and coming up over the next few 6 or 8 weeks. And we'll catch you soon.
Just one last thing, just so that there's no bias. We've had the two Boards England guys on, the two champions of England this year, and we stream and we get a lot of comments right across the British Isles and across the world now even as well. So I just wanted to say, you know, we don't want it to always look as if it's just the Boards England champions that we bring on here. We're always open for any of the other governing body champions or anybody who wants to come on at the podcast, just drop us a line. Anybody is welcome. We can take the mickey out of anybody.
Open house season. Right, folks, there we go. Thanks very much. We'll catch you later.
Later.
This show is dedicated to Abraham Charles Bolt.